May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts always be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our redeemer.
Every morning, the early local newscast reports on how good or bad the daily commute is going. You ever listen to any of those? Of course, what we think are traffic jams really are hardly much of anything. Strategically perched cameras and computer-generated models show whether there is clear sailing or clogged arterials on the major commute routes. Anybody been to Seattle ever? Well, Seattle is a city consistently in the top 10 for its gelatinous traffic jams. The LA freeway is a breezeway compared to Seattle's Route 4 most of the time. And the Seattle newscasters like to keep minute by minute of how slow you can go. Now it takes 20 minutes longer than normal. No, wait. No, it just climbed to 22 minutes longer. Okay, make that 23 minutes above the average drive time from point A to point B. These days, our commuting time can be put to productive work. Your commuting time can be used to practice new language skills, or test the effectiveness of your blood pressure medication, or boost your caffeine intake with some double venti mocha mashup mix, you know, for a mere, about $5. As more people keep smashing into things while talking or texting on their mobile phones, somebody told me the other day, I won't tell you who, she was on her phone. You know, I think it's illegal in Minnesota to hold your phone now. She's on her phone, holding the phone, and she's driving, and some person came up and started banging on the hood. And saying, my friend got killed that way, you crazy person, get rid of the phone. She was afraid because she didn't know what was going to come next. So states keep passing more stricter anti-cell phone legislation because of all this. If you've got a hands-free phone, you can still talk. But since that time of day, everyone else you want to talk to is stuck in traffic with you, it's hard for anyone really to get much work done. But there are other ways to use your commute. The strip of asphalt you're stuck on, or if you are a transit commuter, the interior of your bus or train. Many of you take the train to Minneapolis in the morning. Might not look too impressive, but it is a big part of your everyday existence. What do you see from your car or window? What does your world look like? What is that world telling you? Jesus was a commuter. He commuted to work just like we do. For at least 15 years, Jesus worked as a tecton. We like to translate that word as carpenter, but really it means builder or day laborer. If you've ever been to the Holy Land, you'll laugh when I ask you this question. How many trees did you see over there? Jesus didn't just work in wood. In the first century, they didn't specialize like that, like we do today. He wasn't just a carpenter. Rather, like all builders in that part of the world in the first century, Jesus worked with three kinds of material, mostly with stone, some with metal, and to a lesser extent with wood. Where would he have plied his trade as a builder? Most likely not in Nazareth, a dirt poor small provincial village of no more than 400 people who lived in small stone dwellings. No, most likely Jesus worked as a builder in Zippori, Greek Sepphoris, about 3 miles from the village of Nazareth. During the first 30 years of Jesus' life, there were constant large construction projects going on in the cosmopolitan city known as Sepphoris. Both Roman and Jewish. When Herod Antipas was made tetrarch of the region in 1 CE, he started rebuilding and expanding the town he renamed Autocratus, or the Ornament of Galilee. For any tecton, any builder, Sepphoris was work central. And not unlike today, when every major city is known by its stadiums, one of the first things Herod Antipas wanted to build was a theater. Could it be that Jesus learned the secrets of megaphoning sound from his work on building the theater? From Nazareth, Sepphoris was a 15-minute horseback ride or an hour walk. Most likely, Jesus spent 2 hours a day walking to and from Sepphoris. What did Jesus do on his daily commute? How did he spend his time commuting? I think he became a keen observer of the countryside. Number one, he noted the way the fields grew and changed throughout the cycle of the season. Two, he followed the flights of the birds, the movements of the wild animals, the shepherding of the sheep. Three, he watched the wind blow and felt the coolness of the winter rains and the scorching heat of the summer sun. We know this because when Jesus taught, when he preached his parables and stories, he almost reaches out to the natural world for his images and illustrations. In fact, it seems that Jesus' commute did more to influence his later ministry than did his actual job, his trained profession. How can you draw this conclusion, I hear you saying to yourself? Well, take a look at his imagination. Yes, Jesus preached the importance of the cornerstone and contrasted the house built upon sand with that built upon rock. And yes, Jesus knew the language of stone well enough to found the church on a pun, punning with the name Petrus and Petra. But his architectural examples are few and far between compared to the agricultural ones. What really caught the imagination of Jesus was not the work he did with his hands, but the work his Father was doing with creation and those God entrusted to the care of creation. Jesus may have made his living as a builder, but in his heart, he was a gardener. Who but a gardener would have the courage and conviction to take dry, shriveled up specks of seed and compare them to nothing less than the kingdom of God? It takes a gardener to realize and to see the potential for life, growth, abundance, renewal, beauty, and fulfillment in the handfuls of seeds planted early in the season. It takes a gardener's soul to know that the growth of that crop, no matter how tended or ignored by human hands, is finally in the hands of God. Both Paul and John refer to Jesus as the new Adam and the last Adam. But for them, this was a salvation history identity. The first Adam had fallen into sin, and the relationship between God and the people God created was fatally fractured. Jesus, as the second or last Adam, remained obedient to the Father, even to the cross, even to death. In the last Adam, the right relationship with God is reestablished, and the power of death itself is destroyed. We are returned to the garden, where we can once again sing, "And he walks with me, and he talks with me." But Jesus was the new Adam in a very basic way as well. He recognized that he lived in the Garden of Eden. All that God had created in this world surrounded Jesus as he walked that daily path out of the village of Nazareth to the big city of Sepphoris. And as he walked that village path, God's creation filled Jesus' senses and spoke to his heart. Jesus had eyes to see the beauty of this garden planet. But even more importantly, Jesus had the ears to hear the music of the spheres and the stories that creation had to tell. Jesus wasn't just the second Adam. He was the second gardener. In his daily commute, Jesus heard the voice of God in the lilies of the field, the fall of a sparrow, the weeds along the pathway. The wind and the waves listened to Jesus' voice, perhaps because he first listened to them. Has it ever struck you before how important listening was to Jesus? "You who have ears to hear, hear." Jesus said that over and over again. "You have ears to hear, hear." Throughout his preaching, teaching, and parable weaving, Jesus implored his disciples and the gathered crowds to hear, to listen up, and pay attention. Jesus wasn't asking people merely to prick up their ears. He was asking people to open their hearts. The miracle ear was not an electronic gadget invented to help old ears magnify sounds. The true miracle ear is our heart, also known as the third ear. For it is only when we listen and learn with our third ear, our hearts, that we perceive the miracles that surround us. Our third ear is our miracle ear. And it is only with the miracle ear of our heart that we can hear proclaim the call to God's love and forgiveness that come from Jesus' words and work, life and death and resurrection.
Now, I'm going to do this fast. I'm going to pass these around.
Okay, what I want you to do is write in big capital letters on the back, of course, there's print on the other side.
Heart. Big capital letters, heart. A heart.
Okay. Everybody got it?
Now, Jesus talks about the first shall be last, the last first. What I want you to do is circle the last three letters.
The last three letters. Which would be what?
Art.
Okay. Now let's take care of the first. I want you to circle the first four letters. The first four letters.
What do we have there?
Ear.
Okay. You got that. Great. Now circle the middle three letters of the word heart. The middle three letters. Okay?
Ear.
Ear. We know.
Now take a big circle and circle the word.
Put it all together, and what do you get? The art of hear or hearing requires the ears of the heart. The art of hearing requires the ears of the heart. And think about it. The heart really is a multitasking organ. Its very name demands that we learn the art of hearing with the ears of our heart. So the art of hearing requires the ears of the heart. The art of hearing requires the ears of our heart. So this is my challenge for this week. Since none of you have anything to do, none of us, this is what I want you to do this week. I want you to open up your third ear to listen to God's voice in your life. Remember what that one five-letter word, heart, teaches you. To listen to God's voice is the art of hearing with the ears of the heart. Now, you know that most people will tell you in job interviews and all of this,
well, what are your greatest skills? They tell you two things all the time. I'm a great listener, and I get along with all kinds of people. Okay?
Once they tell me I'm a great listener, I know that it's not true because none of us are great listeners. At least I'm not. I've only in the last 5 years I've been learning to keep my mouth shut. Okay, instead of interrupting people, not listening. We don't really truly listen when you get right down to it. So this is ratcheting up a step. We're going from not only listening to one another, but now taking time and listening to God's voice. We need to learn this meaning of that word heart more than ever, because we are better at saying, "Listen, Lord, your servant is speaking." I'm going to speak all the time. Then speak, Lord, your servant is listening. So for green thumb types, those of you that green thumb, that anything you touch, it blossoms. The divine voice might come to you this week through nature. I was going to say for gangrene thumb types like myself, but I'll say for other thumb types, God's voice might be heard in the rumble of a rebuilt car engine, or the whine of a circular saw, or the humming of a computer. We know Mozart and Beethoven and Handel heard God's voice through keyboards and strings, reeds and brass. But so does Sting, Swift and Seal. So you may be working with flowers, you may be in a garden, you may be working on your convertible, you may be doing something in your work. Listen. And what is God telling you? There are parables of God's power and presence everywhere. Let anyone who has ears to hear, listen. Or in the words of Isaiah, listen, 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 that you may live. Do that this week. Listen, listen to God's voice through the ears of your heart. I think that you and I will learn many new things about ourselves and the world around us, so much so that you and I are going to sow seeds in places we hadn't even imagined we could sow seeds. Are you up to the task? Happy listening, all you Trinitarians.